Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Murder Mile. Today, I'm standing in Green Park, SW1, three streets west of where Sarah Gibson was tortured, four streets southeast of the attack on Tudor Semeneyev, one street west of the murder by David West by David West, and one street from the sadistic slayer with a tear in his eye. Coming soon to Murder Mile. South of Green Park Tube Station, along the western edge of the Ritz Hotel, sits Queen's Walk, a tree-lined path built in 1730 for Queen Caroline by King George II. As a fashionable hangout for Georgian aristocrats, it was not uncommon to see a decadent dandy dabbing his laudanum-soaked lips with a lace hanky as he bleeds a weeping pauper dry of his last pitiful penny, bastardizes the law to benefit his wealthy Etonian chums, and buggers a young boy senseless in a bog as a copper turns a blind eye. Back then, we called them the gentry, but today, we call them politicians. Utter bastards. If so many of them weren't corrupt, why else would a millionaire want a job which pays just 84 grand a year? That said, we all have dreams, whether money, skills, happiness, or the most fleeting of all, fame. At roughly 4 a.m. on Saturday the 25th of July 2009, two strangers would come face to face on Queen's Walk. As boys, they both harnessed a gift which would bring them success and recognition in their own right. And whereas one would become a well-respected doctor through years of hard work, the other would get a little cash and a flash of fame, having had his face plastered on a pack of instant dessert. When a dream becomes reality, it brings with it a wealth of problems. As the hardest part isn't how to achieve your dream, but how to cope when you're riding high, or as you plummet to the ground. My name is Michael. I am your tour guide, and this is Murder Mile. Episode 181, Sweet Dreams.
Your family with the softest, smoothest taste there is. It's delicious, it's lovely, it's angel delight.
As children, we live our lives full of hope and innocence, unaware of what our future may bring. We dream of living a good life and fulfilling our goals, but with little knowledge of the dangers or pitfalls. A child's dream should be light, fluffy and sweet, like a cool glass of angel delight.
Bird's angel delight is delicious.
Born in Hendon, northwest London in 1977, Nadim Ghulam Hussein Walla, was one of two sons born to Vajuddin and Veronica. Originating in Godhra, in the Indian state of Gujarat in northwest India, like the children of many immigrants, whatever dreams they had, part of theirs would be the desire to please their parents and to make their struggle and sacrifice worthwhile. Blessed with parents described as calm and sensible, both boys were raised well and would succeed. Being 2 years his senior, Nadim's big brother would make a serious mark in financial banking, setting up his own company, leading the UK's open banking initiative, and being awarded an OBE in the 2017 New Year's Honours List for his services to finance. That was his dream, and he would achieve it well. Nadim had his own dream, and keen to follow his own path, he would make his mark in medicine. Educated at St. Benedict's School in Ealing, he left in 1993, went to college where he studied A-levels in science, and then he would attain a degree in medicine at Bristol University. Being smart, it's likely he suffered with bullying, as many brain boxes do, especially given that he was from another culture and his skin was a different colour. His upbringing would give him the skills to navigate life's turbulent storms. He would face his own risks, his own dangers, and his own failures, being surrounded by contemporaries, many of whom would be bigger, better, and brighter than himself. No one is perfect, and no one is faultless. So as he slowly climbed the long ladder to success, Nadim would be aware of his faults. But what made him a success was how he learned from his failures and turned his weaknesses into strengths. After his graduation, he became an anatomy demonstrator at King's College in London, where he also met and fell in love with his girlfriend, Caroline Bott. He was exceptionally gifted, but also blessed with kindness and decency. Later described by many as a sharp wit with a silliness that made you laugh, as well as being big-hearted and incredibly loving. Across his illustrious career, Nadim spent 8 years working for the NHS. He was a surgeon at Guy's and St. Thomas's Hospital. He became a member of the Royal College of Surgeons in 2005. And he published research papers, including one into neurological damage owing to stab wounds to the spine. In 2007, Nadim took the prestigious job as a consultant at McKinsey's, a city-based healthcare practice at 1 German Street, just off Piccadilly Circus. As an engagement manager, he would be based out of this office, but he would travel internationally, often back and forth between London and New York. By his early 30s, Nadim was a success with an even brighter life ahead of him. He had achieved fame in his own field. He had done it on his own terms. And he had achieved it through his own hard work. As his father would say, he was on the verge of an exciting future, full of promise and happiness. But as his life was flying high, someone else's dream had smashed to smithereens. Born 13 years after Nadim, 19-year-old Thomas Connor was raised by his mother in St Paul's Cray in Orpington, a small village in the borough of Bromley, southeast London. According to his barrister, although his mother had done her best to raise him and his two-year-old sister, seeing his mum beaten by his father, the family abandoned for more than a decade, and his mother's second husband also beating her up in front of the children, this had left him with trauma. With his education faltering, and burdened by a succession of shitty male role models, even as a young boy, he risked being sucked into a world of wastrels and ne'er-do-wells, whose daily high point was hoofing aerosols, contracting STDs, and pissing another day up the wall like a spent bottle of blue WKD. Everyone has a dream, but sometimes what every child needs is someone to give them a chance.
Bird's Angel Delight is delicious.
In June 2001, global giant Kraft Foods were looking to rebrand a family favourite, Angel Delight. First launched in 1967, Angel Delight is a powdered instant pudding which turns into a fluffy mousse when milk is added. Back then, when Thomas was barely 11, there were 7 varieties. Strawberry, banana, chocolate, forest fruits, raspberry, vanilla, and for those with no taste buds, butterscotch. Seen as old-fashioned, they aimed to revitalise it as something fun for kids to make with their mums. The packets had a pop art design full of funky colours and bold lettering, with a different child's face for every flavour. Fun was added to the packet by giving it a silly name like Stonking Strawberry. And each child's face was graffitied with a funny moustache, eyebrows or a beard, made from the frothy whip. With the design approved, what they needed was 7 children with angelic faces. Thomas had never modelled before, and he had no dreams of becoming a model. But blessed with soft blonde hair, a cheeky face, and ears like a two-handled jug, he fit their image of a little angel. Chosen from a pool of thousands, not only was his face selected to be on the packets in every supermarket and on adverts on every television across the country, but as the brand's favourite, he was specifically chosen amongst the few to be the face of Stonking Strawberry, the brand's top-selling flavour.
The thing about Angel Delight is that it tastes deliciously creamy.
The photo shoot was a breeze, and the fee was a welcome addition to this struggling little family. But more importantly, as a leg up the ladder of success, his fame would be instant.
Bird's Angel Delight. Don't let go of your glass.
In their young lives, whereas Nadim had set aside his bully's taunts as the jealous rantings of losers who would achieve nothing, Thomas let their hurtful barbs jab at his skin like the prickles of dickheads. Bullied, beaten, and branded as gay by his classmates, he was mercilessly teased and taunted as the face of a packet pudding. As a global campaign, the company had ploughed millions into, the rebranding of Angel Delight would be around for the best part of a decade. This flash of fame should have been the springboard to a brighter career and a better life. but riddled with anxiety and depression. It had ruined his childhood and left him with a legacy he resented. Unable to cope, he ran away from home. Having left school, he struggled to hold down a regular job. And seeing no way to escape his torment as the Angel Delight kid, he tried to take his own life. Across his teenage years, when the world should have been a place of limitless dreams, Thomas should have been the epitome of happiness. Only drifting from rejection to rejection, he would waste his days hanging around with his pal, William Patton. Another bully boy, described as a talentless waster, who was used as a verbal punchbag, having been branded with the nicknames of Billy Idiot and Forrest Gump. To distract himself from the horror, he took cocaine and visited brothels. With a history of self-harm, he had tried to join the army, but was rejected. And with the last 4 years of his life a write-off, Thomas was at his wit's end. The boy who had found fame as the face of an instant pudding was a lost soul with no future, whose image, every day in millions of homes, was being tossed into the bin.
Burns Angel Delight is delicious.
On Friday the 24th of July 2009, Thomas was accepted as an assistant at the local garden centre. It was a simple job for a modest wage, but this distant glimpse of hope would leave him in a celebratory mood. Finally, his shitty little life had turned a corner. But a few hours later, the boy dubbed Britain's Little Angel would brutally beat a stranger to death. Friday the 24th of July 2009 was a regular day in a seemingly ordinary world. When a dim, after 2 years as engagement manager at healthcare practice McKinsey's, his life was hectic, travelling back and forth from London to New York. But he had done his best to keep a work-life balance. Still very much in love with his girlfriend, Caroline, they would see each other as often as possible, but when their careers and lives got in the way, they always made time to chat on the phone. Having returned from New York, by early evening, Nadim had left his office on German Street and was heading out for a fun evening with a friend at Funky Buddha, just around the corner at 15 Berkeley Street in Mayfair. That night, still being in a jubilant mood, Thomas and his pal William headed to a bar in Bromley to sink a few suds and to neck a few shots. The two boys, both aged 19, were here to dance, to laugh, and to party. With their hometown being too quiet to kick back, and the pubs already kicking out, they purchased a gram of cocaine for £40. They had a swift toot of Colombia's finest, and they took the night bus to London. Mayfair's clubs are notoriously snooty over who they let in. So being dressed to impress, the barely legal lads made their nostrils extra festive with an extra snort from Santa's little magic bag and headed to Strawberry Moons, a nightclub hidden on Heddon Street, with the usual half-deaf DJ banging out tunes too loud to hear, an overpriced cocktail bar for fans of watered-down vodka with fruit, and a pink checkered dance floor, where posers try to mimic John Travolta, but end up moving like crabs with piles. For Thomas and William, they were just two young lads out for a bit of a boogie. But cocaine can have a different effect in different ways. It can make us fun, silly, arrogant, and selfish. It can heighten the best and the worst characteristics of our personalities, making the timid chatty and the twats into massive arseholes. But when mixed with alcohol, it can make for bad bedfellows. At 2 a.m., Thomas, accompanied by William, left Strawberry Moons and headed into Soho. With little open in the wee small hours, this single lad headed to Rupert Street, a place synonymous at that time of the night for just one thing: sex. Approached by a prostitute from a cash machine, Thomas withdrew £90 and handed it over. Seeing this sweet-faced lad was worse for wear and not particularly bright. With his brain powered by his balls, she played the oldest trick in the book: to prey on a drunk, to play on his needs. And having grabbed his cash and swiftly fled, he lost her in a maze of Soho's backstreets and side alleys. The boy who was once the saintly face of Angel Delight had been ripped off by a Soho sex worker. But instead of dealing with it, as he had done by being bullied over his brief brush with minor fame as the epitome of innocence for a child's packet of instant whip, he let his anger eat him up inside. Like too many boys who were bullied, faced with an obstacle, the bullied would become the bully, ganging up as they're too afraid to go it alone and hitting out at those who can't defend themselves. Being out of money and still sporting an unused erection, Thomas wanted cash to buy a shag. As a sulking twosome skulked the dark-lit streets from Soho to St. James's, they hatched a plan to rob a stranger, as just off the path in Green Park, they hid behind a tree on Queen's Walk. Having had a good night and said goodbye to an old friend, 32-year-old Nadim was walking a familiar route from the club in Mayfair to his flat in Westminster. Although it had gone 4 a.m, being barely 30 minutes before dawn, he was on the phone to his girlfriend Caroline. Entering Green Park by the gates to the side of the Ritz Hotel, Queen's Walk was dark and empty, with not a living soul to see or hear. According to Caroline, he sounded happy, his usual bright self, enjoying the good life he had made for himself through his own hard work. About 100 feet down Queen's Walk, Nadim stopped to lean against the black wrought iron railings. With his girlfriend worried about him walking through the park alone, he reassured her that he would take a taxi the rest of the way home, but said he was enjoying the night air. in the familiar dark of Green Park, and a path he had walked many times before. The faint light of his phone was the only light illuminating his face as he spoke to the woman he loved for one last time. Having had a long day, he said he felt tired, and he was jealous of the fact that she was already in bed. Caroline would later state, he started saying something else. Then there was 2 to 3 seconds of white noise. I just said, hello?
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 And then the phone went dead. Caroline would later state, I thought his battery had died. I didn't try to ring him again, because I thought he would be home in 20 minutes, and he would ring or text me to say he got home safely. It had happened before, and with nothing to really worry her, I tried to stay awake. But with the hour being so late, I fell asleep. It seemed like just a regular call, hampered by bad technology. Only Nadim would never make it home. Shown as evidence, footage would clearly show no provocation prior to the attack. Thomas and Nadim had barely exchanged glances for a split second, and they hadn't spoken a single word. While Nadim was on the phone, a look of horror engulfed his face as Thomas swung a 10-kilo cast iron railing at his head. In his confession, Thomas would admit,
I don't know why. I was just really angry at everything. Everyone being rude. As he leaned over while on the phone, I struck him down. He got up, looked at me, and I hit him square on the head. I saw his eyes were open. I thought he was looking at me, so I got scared. I stamped on his head a couple of times.
Knocked unconscious, Nadim suffered multiple skull fractures as Thomas stamped on his head and his face. And as the young gifted doctor, who was barely halfway through his life, lay dying on the ground, Thomas's pal, William Patton, rifled the bleeding man's pockets, stealing his phone, wallet, and cash. In the time it would take to make some angel delight, Nadim's dream was shattered. And all because of a selfish little boy whose own dream had become a nightmare.
Angel delight is delicious.
With his family devastated, Imran would state, my brother was killed in a barbaric, senseless, and utterly unprovoked attack. He had no argument with the men, but they brutally robbed him of his life and his future. Discovered by a passerby just a few minutes later, at 4:15 a.m., police and paramedics were called, and Nadim was rushed to hospital in a critical condition. But having suffered a brain hemorrhage, he remained in a coma for 2 weeks, until Wednesday the 5th of August 2009, when he was declared legally dead. On the day of his death, using CCTV, DNA, fingerprints, and mobile phone data, Thomas and William were arrested, with Thomas stating,
I was looking at him for a couple of seconds, thinking, what have I done? I really thought he was dead. I kept saying to Bill, he's dead. I think he's dead.
And yet, so traumatized were the boys, having believed they had killed a stranger, that while the paramedics were fighting to save his life, they returned to Soho so Thomas could fuck. Pleading not guilty, in a 3-week trial at the Old Bailey, Thomas Connor was sentenced to life in prison for murder with a minimum of 25 years, with William Patton to a minimum of 23 years, and both boys due to serve an additional 10 years for robbery to run concurrently. When a dream becomes reality, it brings with it a wealth of problems. As the hardest part isn't how to achieve your dream, but how to cope when you're riding high, or as you plummet to the ground.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need. I think that's it. Yeah. Oh, frig it. Oh, hot, sweaty. Hello, everyone. How's everyone doing? You all good? Oh, dear. It's muggy out today. Heat wave is coming back. Bloody heat wave. I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to be as bad as a couple of weeks ago when it was getting close to the 40s. Did we reach 40? I can't remember. I know we're bloody close to it. I think we did, didn't we? Hottest on record. Oh, dear. Anyway, it's muggy at the moment. We got a week of it coming in. Bastard. I'm just going to take off your hat. Hang on. Here we go. There we go. Your hat's off. You can probably hear me better now. Oh, I've moved away. I've moved away from the weir that was there. So last week in Extra Mile, you would have heard a throughout Extra Mile. Not in this week's episode. Oh, dear Lord. Because window open. Nice and quiet. So I'm just going to open a couple of doors. The only problem is I went to moor up in a place. Oh, hang on. Open some windows. Oh, that's nicer. Oh, a bit of fresh air coming in. I had to moor up in a place because I knew the heat wave was coming back. So I thought, right, I'm going to go back to my little hidey hole, my little hidey place hidden away, which is nice. It's underneath trees. Hang on, I'm just going to get rid of it. I put pillows behind the curtains to dampen some of the sound because people walk past and they're like, oh Maureen, tell me about your piles. I'm on the towpath. This is the perfect place to have a private conversation about hemorrhoids. So I'm trying to dampen out the sound, but I've moved to a place which is great. It's underneath the
trees so it can stay a little bit cooler than everyone else, which is why I survived the heat wave last time. But it's a little bit shallow, so the bottom of the boat is scraping along the bottom of the canal. It's not particularly good. So every time a boat goes past, all you can hear is it's a horrible sound. Ugh. So, oh dear. I'm not going to make a cup of tea today. It's too hot for tea. Baking in here. There's a... I'm going to have a little swig of lime Diet Coke. Oh, those chemicals, lovely. Oh, fresh. I'm knackered already. It's not even 4 in the afternoon. I've been ploughing away since 5 a.m. I'm knackered. I've done it. It's moving boat day. So I deliberately get, because all the holiday boaters are out and they're a bit shit at knowing how to boat. They boat like once in a blue moon and they forget everything. Then they get on the waterway and they think they remember everything, but they're terrible. They're really bad at remembering shit. So I get up early. I knew I had two locks to cover and potentially a third one. So I was like, right, I'm going to get to the first lock. So got to the first lock. It was already open. That was good. And the between the two locks is about a 300, maybe 400 foot gap, which is called the centre pound. And the centre pound is like a little expanse of water which fills up and that gets you to the next lock. And that's... The problem is the gates on there are really leaky. They've been leaky for ages. They're absolutely effed. They really are. They're absolutely effed. So I thought I'll turn up early and check it's okay. And I looked at it and I thought, it's not terrible. It's not great, but it's just, it could be enough to get me through. So I got the boat through and chugged it through and I made it to the next lock. And that was brilliant. So I started opening up the paddles to fill up the next lock so I can get through. And then my boat got grounded. And, oh, it's so annoying. So it took about an hour and a half to refill that massive 300 to 400 pound of all the water just so I could refloat myself because the boat was grounded in the water and I couldn't jump onto the boat. Oh, that's the excitement of living on the boat. Oh, then it. But the problem is I couldn't open the gates either because there wasn't enough water. So I was having to push against these gates and my legs are absolutely effed at the moment. I was using too much force. Which is why I think it's funny when you watch those programs with Prue, whatever her name is, from Fawlty Towers, and Timothy, her husband, on the canal. And they're both old and doddery. And you see them going along going, oh, Prue, let's go through this lock and then we will moor up here. And it's so contrived because it's like you see them mooring up in places that I know really well. Like there's a great one where they go into Paddington and they're mooring up into Paddington. And they go, oh, Prue, this looks like a nice place to moor up. And they moor up and they get the first spot and there's loads of space. There's like barely a handful of boats there. And you go, oh, that's lucky. It's not lucky. Literally, the enforcement... it's meant to be a charity, but the group who kind of runs the waterways, they basically told everyone, F off the waterways. Prue and Timothy are coming in, F off. So we weren't allowed to moor up there. So they turn up and it goes, Prue, this looks perfect. And it's very funny when you see them going through locks. You see them kind of half pushing a lock themselves, but they're not. Half of these locks, even for someone who's relatively fit like myself, who's got a good set of legs on me and a good back and I can kind of put some heft into it, even I struggled with the locks today. Even my legs are sore having pushed these locks that some of them weigh a good couple of tons. So there's no way that Prue and Timothy are doing that. It's so contrived. So anyway, oh, the fun you can have on the waterway. Anyway, this is me done. I've done this recording. I'll power through. It's a Monday. I always work every day anyway. I rarely take it off. But I wanted to get myself ahead because we've got the live show this week in London on Thursday. So I wanted to make sure I've got a day to do everything I need to do for that. So I've got myself a day. So it's Monday and I've recorded the script, which is great. So I'm ahead. So that means tomorrow I shall go into Costa Coffee at 7 a.m. and I shall be abusing their Wi-Fi and abusing their electricity and doing a clean-up and a first run of the narration for this episode. Oh, so there you go. Thank you to new Patreon supporters. Thank you very much. Who are Lou Williamson and Leslie Slaney. Thank you to both of you for becoming Patreon supporters. There's lots of really lovely goodies in there. We've got photos, we've got videos. if you're on the $3 tier, it's photos, videos. I try and do a weekly thank you message as well. That's on there. And every Friday I do, there's loads of them in there now. I always try and do a murder-related film every Friday. So Friday evening, if you've got nothing planned, there's always a kind of an interesting film that'll pop on there. And people seem to like them. They always go, oh, either you haven't seen this for years or you haven't given it a go. And it's always something, it's something interesting. I always try and post something that's different every week. So that's on there. If you become a, I think it's a £7, was it $7? I can't remember. $7 patron. You get Walk With Me, which is the weekly exclusive episodes. There's about 100 of them now that go out. And after I've edited the episode, I go through everything that's in the episode. So you know all the stuff that nobody else will ever know in Extra Mile. This is all the stuff that I save for there. If you become a $10 patron, you get all the early episodes. So instead of waiting until Thursday to get your episodes, you get your episodes on Monday. Core Lummy, plus everything else as well. And then there are the $15 patrons. Ooh, thank you guys. They get exclusive Murder Mile mug. Everyone gets all goodies sent to them. You get some get the exclusive little red key rings. They're very rare. So there's lots of goodies. And I always post lots of crime scene photos and really interesting stuff. And I know quite often on some people's the patron stuff that they, like a week later, they'll share it with everyone else. But I try not to. I try and keep it as special patron stuff. So it's very much worth subscribing for. If you want to, and if you can. If you can't, that's not a problem at all. Times are hard, as is proving at the moment. Just a quick thank you, just to say, I apologise. I've entirely forgot that I've got the donation thing. What's it called? Supporter? I entirely forgot, because it's an ACAS system and they don't tell you when, they don't email you to go, Michael, a donation has just come through. They just don't let you know at all. You've got to keep checking it and checking it. And it's only because I checked my bank account today and noticed some money had gone in. I went, oh, what's that? And then I realised two people had very kindly sent me donations. So a belated thank you to Colin and Bernadette H. Thank you for sending a very lovely donation via the supporter app, which is in the show notes, I believe. Or have I deleted it? I might have taken it off the new episodes. Well, there you go. That's me ballsing stuff up, as always. Or is it? I don't know. I think Acast might add one as well. I can't remember. So maybe I'll re-add it. So yes, hard times for everyone ahead. I had an interesting conversation with the guy who was running the pub where we had the meet and greet with Mike from Dark Poutine. And I went in there to get my deposit back, because you can, which was good. And I said, oh, do you know, I'm really sorry. We tried to get more people in there, but we didn't have as many as we would have hoped. And he was like, don't worry, everything's gone weird at the moment. And even though I talked to him on a Saturday, he said last night, so i.e. the Friday, he said, we had our worst night ever. He said, Friday night, and this is in a pub that even on a Tuesday is packed out, standing room only. And he said, on a Friday night, between 7 and 10, they had 8 customers who each bought one drink. And he's got 3 members of staff on that night. And he said, by 10:30, he had to shut down the pub. He was just like, there's no point keeping it open anymore. And I've got mates who are at the... I used to do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival every year, and they've got mates at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival at the moment. And they're sending pictures. They're like, my mate Aidan sent a picture and he said, this is the Royal Mile, which is the busiest kind of street for kind of flyering and shit, in Edinburgh on a Saturday lunchtime. And it was a ghost town. It's yeah, hard times for everyone. So I think everyone's knuckling down a little bit. Let's do some quiz questions. These might be a bit difficult, but... let's give them a go. Don't forget, I probably may have have I deleted some of these questions? Yes, one of them I definitely have deleted because I didn't record it. So there's 9 questions. We will ignore the 10th question. Let's do this. Right. Question number 1. To the closest decade, I've written the word closet decade, whatever a closet decade is. To the closest decade, what year was Queen's Walk built? Question number 2. It was named after... Queen's Walk was named after which member of the royal family? Question number 3. The family, Nadim's family originated from which state in northwest India? Question four. Nadim worked for which healthcare practice in Piccadilly? Oh, dear. Dry throat. That's not the answer to the question. He's not dry throat. Question number five. Angel Delight was owned by which global brand? Question number six. Now, core, this is a seven-part question. I will give you a point if you can guess four. Okay. Question number six. Name the seven varieties of Angel Delight in 2001. So the seven, but I'll give you a point if you guess four. Question number seven. Which flavour was Thomas the face of? Question number eight. What two nicknames was William Patton given? So that's his buddy William Patton. What was his two nicknames? There's actually three in total. We'll do that shortly. Question number nine, which is our final one. Where did Thomas finally get a job? Almost. Question number 10 was who won the women's Wimbledon tennis final that year? The answer was Serena Williams. But there was a whole section in there about what happened in that year. But in the end, whilst recording it, I decided to take it out. So let's dive into some stuff to do with this episode. Annoyingly, very annoyingly, normally what I do is I create a little like a biog for myself of everything I need to know and everything's in chronological order. And then before I start writing it, I copy it and paste it at the bottom and then I can start cannibalising the piece that I've got. Unfortunately, I forgot to paste and copy. So it was only when I was getting near the episode and I thought, oh, I'll save this for the end. And then I realised I hadn't saved all my old data. So not a lot of it has left. But to be honest, most of the information I used in this episode, because it was one of these really... There's nothing in the archives about this because it's too new. Pretty much everything I got from was kind of from newspapers and sources and things like that. So, and as we've seen many times before, quite often with newspapers, they don't do their own research. They basically get the press report from either AP Wire or Press Association or Reuters, and then they slightly change a couple of words here and there. Quite often they will go, a source says, and what they mean is, I looked on Twitter. Or, as they quite often do, if they find out where someone lives, like on a certain street, they will call up neighbours on the street. They will just call as many numbers as they can, which they could do back when people still had home phones, which not a lot of people still do now. Things have changed, and that's what they do. That would be a source. So they love saying a source, and what they mean is, I can't be asked to do any work. This is why some details are really annoying in here. So, Nadim, so post the attack, they said he was taken to King's Cross Hospital. There isn't a King's Cross Hospital. There's St Pancras Hospital, and there's the one just on the new one, the ICL on Warren Street. So again, the press have kind of balls this up here, so I couldn't actually pin down exactly what hospital he was taken to, which is weird because the nearest hospital to Green Park is St Thomas's, which is where he was a resident surgeon, and that's south. But for some reason, the ambulance went north. Maybe they were busy that day. Anyway, the police and the ambulance were called at approximately 4:15. They reckon the attack took place just a couple of minutes after 4 a.m. As mentioned, Nadim was discovered by a passerby who happened to be walking through the park. It was dawn at about 4:30 a.m. At that. Someone's got an angle grinder out. Oh, it's so annoying. It was almost dawn. So if you're out that early in London, there's pretty much always people out. You know, a lot of people doing their really important jobs, the jobs that we kind of forget about, helping to keep the city run properly, the people who are paid really badly as well. They're the ones who are up early, working their asses off. So... yeah, so someone was walking through Green Park. I've done it myself at night, walk through the parks. I walk through Regent's Park, Green Park. I find it relatively safe. I don't really have a problem with it. You just keep your eyes open, as you would on a busy street. I think you're more likely to get beaten up on a busy street than in a park. And at least in a park, you can disappear, you can hide somewhere. As mentioned, he was taken to hospital in a critical condition, but did not recover. His friend, his family and his girlfriend were beside him, and he spent 12 days on life support. But owing to his injuries, which included multiple skull fractures and a large blood clot on the brain, he, as mentioned, he was on life support on the Wednesday, the 5th of August, 2009. They had to take him off life support. He was declared as clinically dead. What else have we got? Thomas and William. So as mentioned in the episode, as the ambulance turns up to save his life, they've got his money and they head off back into Soho. He did say, I don't think Bill really knew what I was going to do. This was part of the defence in the court case. Sorry, a boat going past. Hence, it's a little bit loud at the moment. And you can hear scraping underneath. Oh, that's a fine figure of a man. Lovely. Not that I've got a body to talk about, but Christ, at least I cover mine up. No one wants to see mine, except Eva. And sometimes even she doesn't. So, part of the defence was they kind of blamed each other, as kind of briefly mentioned. What was said in the trial was that they had kind of made an agreement that they were going to rob someone. William, who he refers to as Bill, was going to hide behind a tree and they were going to jump out at the person they were going to attack. But William, i.e. Bill, said that he didn't know that Thomas was going to grab a pole and start beating the guy over the head and then kicking, stamping on his face. That was his kind of defence for it. Thomas Connor would kind of say that as well. He'd say, I don't think Bill really knew what I was going to do. He said he had a bad feeling and thought the victim was dead. I was looking at him for a couple of seconds thinking, what have I done? I didn't want him to die. I just kept running as fast as I could. I was so scared. I really thought he was dead. I kept saying to Bill, he's dead, he's dead. I think he's dead. And then all of a sudden, they go to Soho again. The pair headed back to Soho to find another prostitute. Both defendants admitted spending Nadim's money on a prostitute after the assault. So how distraught could they really be, having beaten up a man and kicked him to death? And then they were like, oh, I know, let's go and pick up a prostitute and shag her. Now, obviously, if this was I'd had access to the court records, I'd be able to find you. We would have probably already gone through what was Thomas's and potentially what was William's. What was their criminal records before, what they've been charged with, but we don't have access to that. I had a kind of a trawl around, but obviously Thomas's name is quite familiar. Williams, there's not much in there, and both, don't forget, they're not too far away from 16, so a lot of the details wouldn't be in there, and it wasn't released to the police. They went into Soho, they had sex with a prostitute, and then they headed back home to Kent. So yeah, they're clearly distraught by this. Detective Inspector Jeff Minns was the investigating officer for the Homicide and Serious Crime Command. It was relatively simple for them. They'd made the arrest based on the CCTV footage. So if you're in London, pretty much every street is covered by CCTV, not just private stuff, but obviously no. We've got all the insurance cameras on there. We've got the traffic cameras. It's everywhere. It really is, which is why we were able. And don't forget, they're going down Piccadilly, which is right next to the Ritz and right next to De Beers and all the kind of the new Bond Street and places like that. These places are absolutely littered with CCTV cameras, and even in the parks as well. Like, I was going through the local park near me the other day and I thought it was quite remote, and then I realized there's loads of little cameras around because they've got lots of wildlife that they're keeping an eye on the wildlife, but they're keeping an eye on the pricks who might turn up and steal some of the wildlife, because people are knobheads and they do that. So the police were able to see, obviously they got Nadim's card, and being dim lads that they are, they'd used his card to make cash withdrawals. So they knew when that was being done. They also used his mobile phone, therefore they were able to use GPS positioning, therefore they were able to track down what they looked like. also on the 10 foot, on the 10 kilo, so it's quite heavy. The it was actually, they call it a fence post and a fence pole on there, but it's actually one of the wrought iron railings. I'll put a picture of it on social, just so you can get an idea of it. But it's kind of a railing that goes up to chest height. One of them had broken loose. Thomas had picked that up. It's really heavy. It's made of cast iron, really, really heavy. That's what he used to whack him around the head. Obviously, he threw it aside, and police turned up later on and found his fingerprints and his DNA. Now, obviously, we don't know whether Thomas was charged with any crimes prior. Therefore, the police would have potentially his DNA or his fingerprints, but police were able to use it to arrest him pretty quickly. As mentioned, he was arrested on Wednesday, the 5th of August 2009, which was 12 days after the attack. It's also the same day that Nadim would die. What else have we got? Both men at the time were only 19 years old. A lot of press reports say that they're 20, but there were 20 when it went to court. There were 19 when the attack took place. What else is there? Initially charged with suspicion of robbery and attempted murder, because at that point Nadim was still alive. It hadn't made it through. One thing that I searched, I couldn't find any more info on. A third man was held at an address in Portsmouth, also age 19, but was released and no further action was taken. This third man was arrested alongside Thomas and William. He seems to be another friend who was out with them that day, but we don't know anything about him. Therefore, for the sake of clarity, I've erased him from this story, because there's no point saying a third man was there, but we don't know anything about him. He lived in Portsmouth. He was 19, but we don't know where or why. We don't know his connection to anyone. I'll save it for this bit. What else we got? Trial at the Old Bailey before Judge Stephen Cramer QC began on the 13th of November 2010. That was almost a year and a half later. It took that long to kind of piece everything together. In total, it took 3 weeks. In defence, both men, who were aged 20 by that point, blamed each other for the senseless and random attack, which was captured on CCTV. Both men conducted what is called, in legal circles, a cutthroat defence, blaming each... Burpees. That's not in the statement. Blaming each other for the murder in a bid to win a not guilty verdict. Halfway through the trial, as they were being brought to court in a police van, Thomas Connor threatened to kill his former friend, who is William Patton. They pleaded not guilty, but they were convicted after a 3-week trial. What else we got? As mentioned, Thomas Connor must serve a minimum of 25 years in prison. So that was 2010. He would have done 12 by now, so he's halfway through his sentence. So this is minimum he has to do. So he won't potentially go on parole until 2035. That's the first he can see the real world, see life. By which time, well, what would he be? He would be 45 by then. William Patton must do at least 23 years behind bars, and as mentioned, they have to do 10 years for robbery to be served concurrently. I think concurrently means at the same time, doesn't it? Which I never understand that. It's like you charge for an offence. And they say, we're going to charge you for 5 years for this, and then 1 year for this to be served concurrently, which I think should be 6 years. But they go, no, you can serve it at the same time. And you go, why? It's like when you get a little shitbag who's stolen a car and killed someone. And what do they do? They go, well, he's underage, so we'll serve him with he's not allowed to drive for 5 years. And, and you just think, but he's underage. He's a 13-year-old scrote. He can't drive for another 3 years. And then you're going to put him in youth service for the next 5 years. So he can't get access to a car anyway. And it's those shitty little sentences where they feel they're ticking boxes. They go, oh, well, we have to do this. Yeah, well, there we go. We've done it. We're not going to allow him to drive a car for 5 years, even though he can't drive a car for five years. You just go, what's the point? Sentencing the pair, there's Miriam Laurent. Sentencing the pair, Judge Stephen Kramer QC said that they had targeted their victim as easy prey and left him for dead. The doctor was an admirable and fine man who had done nothing to provoke the attack. He was a talented man with the prospect of a promising career ahead of him, which you have snuffed out. Fueled by alcohol and cocaine, you used gratuitous violence on a man you must have known was vulnerable. As mentioned, both men must also serve 10 years for robbery. It's got a statement here by Detective Inspector Jeff Minns, who was an investigating officer. He said, I welcome today's verdict. Only Nadim's family and friends can really understand what the last 8 months have been like, and I would like to thank them for their unwavering support of the police and their patience throughout the investigation and trial. The result today won't bring Nadim back, but hopefully it brings them a degree of comfort and will assist them in coming into terms with the tragic and traumatic events of the 25th of July last year. Whilst they have to endure the pain and bereavement following the death of Nadim, his brother Imran, his mother and father, and girlfriend Rebecca have done this with utmost dignity. I would also like to thank of crucial importance was the DNA and CCTV evidence in this case, both of which hugely assisted in the successful outcome, which is very much true. You've seen all these cases so many times where something happens to someone in the middle of a place where there's no cameras, and if they haven't got DNA and haven't got fingerprints, they're pretty much screwed. There was a funeral for Nadim. More than 500 people turned up. I think that's it. I think that's all I've got on that one. Because don't forget, I deleted most of the. I think pretty much everything I was going to say is in the episode. So, let's do the answers to the questions. Let's see how many I fucked up. And a very very blue episode this week. Lots of Fs, wasn't there? Lots of S, but then again, it was an emotive episode. Let's see how many I ballsed up and how many I will edit out. So question one, what's the closest decade to the closest decade? What year was Queen's Walk built? It was built in 1730. When you look at it, it's a path. It's a path. There's some bollards on the side of it. It's a path. I don't know why we have to know when it was built. It's a path. Question two. The path was named after which member of the royal family? It was Queen Caroline. Although I went past a pub the other day, which was called the Duke of York. And is it Andrew's Duke of York, isn't he? Who's the Duke of... He's Duke of Paedophiles, anyway. There we go. Question number three. Nadim's family originated from which state in northwest India? It was Godram. Wonder how many people have got. Probably none. These are quite difficult. Question four. Nadim worked for which healthcare practice in Piccadilly? It was McKinsey's. Question five. Angel Delight, yum, was owned by which global brand? Kraft Foods, who were well known for fucking up British brands. They have picked up some of our good products before and they have turned them into shit. Question number six. Name the seven varieties of Angel Delight in 2001. So if you got four, I'll give you the point for this. So they were strawberry, banana, chocolate, forest fruits, I know, raspberry, vanilla, and for those with no taste buds, butterscotch. Ugh, always hated butterscotch. It's disgusting. Question seven, what flavour was Thomas the face of? He was the face of stonking strawberry. If you Google it, you'll see his face on there. Question eight, what two nicknames was William Patton given? He was known as Billy Idiot and Forrest Gump. His other one, they used to call him Silly Billy, and I just thought that just sounds shit. And question nine, where did Thomas finally get a job? At the garden centre. There we go. So that's that. That's me done. And I'm not going to edit anything. It's 4:15. I'm knackered. I'm going to go for a walk. Even though I've done my walks for the day, I've done almost 13,000 steps. I'll do another couple of thousand steps, and then I'll get ready for din-dins. Din-dins. So that's me done. Thank you, everyone. Have yourself a good week. Stay safe and be good. If you're coming to our live show on Thursday, we look forward to seeing you there. We've got the Manchester one coming up. We can try and work out whether we can live stream it, but it's not just a case of just putting up a camera, because what we know is if we put up a camera, the sound has to be good, the vision has to be good. Otherwise, there's no point in you tuning in to watch it. Otherwise, you go, I watched it, but I couldn't see you. I couldn't tell what was going on. I couldn't hear anything. So I want to make sure that the quality is decent. So we're only going to do live streaming if it's good enough. If it's not good enough, we're not going to do it. So, but come to London, come to Manchester. If Manchester goes well, we'll do more. So that's it. Have yourself a good week, folks. Stay safe and be good. Enjoy life. Make the most of everything that we've got and things like that, etc., etc., etc. That's it. I'm done. Stay safe, be good. Lots of love, everyone.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.